airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available from iTunes Podcast, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
Trump's election was made official on Monday, but a number of Americans still question the authenticity of his win. Did Elon Musk and Vladimir Putin help manipulate a Trump victory? One journalist says definitely not. But investigative journalist Greg Palast says Trump lost. Voter suppression won. Stay with us. Good morning. Good morning and welcome to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown. But first, an appeals court judge slapped down President-elect Donald Trump's request to stop his Friday sentencing in the case involving his payment of hush money to a porn star. Trump's lawyer, Tarik Blanch, filed an appeal writing, quote, New York Supreme Court presidential immunity rulings are causing ongoing irreparable harm by depriving President Trump of his constitutional rights, end quote. Still, however, Associate Justice Ellen Gessmer shot down the appeal, stating, quote, after consideration of the papers and extensive oral argument, Movent's application for an interim stay is denied, end quote. Trump, of course, was found guilty of multiple counts of business fraud after he paid an adult movie star to keep quiet about a sexual encounter with him. It was argued that he was trying to keep the information from voters in the 2016 presidential election. Trump's legal team will likely appeal the decision to the New York Supreme Court immediately and ask for an expedited decision, according to experts. Meanwhile, his election was made official on Monday. Congress officially certified Trump's 2024 election victory, taking him one step closer to assuming the Oval Office at the end of this month. It was the final step before Trump's inauguration on January 20th. The orderly process was in stark contrast to the violent mob scene that took place at the Capitol 4 years ago when armed rioters protesting the results of the 2020 election halted proceedings, leaving five people dead, injuring many others, including 174 police officers, and forcing lawmakers into hiding for several hours. $2.7 million worth of damage was done, according to Wikipedia. For some Democrats, independents and supporters of then-candidate Kamala Harris, making the results official were a bitter pill to swallow, and questions continue to haunt them as to the fairness of the election. One question involved the magnitude of the win. Initially, it was portrayed as a landslide. In the final count, Trump won 49.9% of the popular vote, and Harris won 48.4%. which equals about 1.5% difference. Clearly not a landslide. The country was almost evenly split, but of course Trump won the Electoral College votes handily, 312 to 226. The Republican victory was buoyed by the congressional wins, which gave the GOP control of both the House and the Senate. Of the battleground states, only Michigan and Wisconsin were even close, 49.7% to 48.8%. In Wisconsin, and 49.7% to 48.3% in Michigan. And of course, close only counts in horseshoes. And in the end, it came down to every vote counting. And Trump's plea to Christian evangelicals to get out and vote this time apparently paid off. Then candidate Donald Trump.
We have to win this election, most important election ever. We want a landslide that's too big to rig. If you want to save America, get your friends, get your family, get everyone you know, and vote. Vote early, vote absentee, vote on election day. I don't care how, but you have to get out and vote. And again, Christians, get out and vote just this time. You won't have to do it anymore. Four more years, you know what? It'll be fixed. It'll be fine. You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians. I love you, Christians. I'm a Christian.
Donald Trump, candidate Donald Trump. Well, white evangelical Christians turned out for Trump in large numbers, but African Americans, Latinos, and Asians evangelical Christians, not so much. And there was something about what Trump said that planted seeds of doubt in the minds of many who were baffled about what he could have meant by, you'll never have to vote again. It'll be fixed. It'll be fine. That, along with the deep-pocketed involvement of South African billionaire businessman Elon Musk in the Trump campaign, that inexplicable statement haunts skeptics of the Trump victory. So this morning on What's at Stake, we're going to speak with two analysts, journalists actually, who have examined the results of the 2024 election and have come up with two different results in terms of whether foul play or fraud played a role. In our first segment, we're going to go first to Sarah Swan, a reporter for PolitiFact, which is owned by the Poynter Institute, a company that until recently did fact-checking for Meta platforms, including Facebook and Instagram. Sarah Swan helped write the fact check about claims that Elon Musk's Starlink was used to manipulate the 2024 election. Good morning, Sarah Swan, and welcome to What's at Stake.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Sarah, in an article on your report findings is titled, No, Elon Musk's Starlink was not used to rig the 2024 election for Donald Trump. Federal and state election officials rebutted claims of widespread fraud. They said there are longstanding systems to ensure voting integrity. So that's a pretty definitive conclusion. What kind of research did you conduct to arrive at that conclusion?
Yeah, so we spoke with election security experts and state and local election officials to get to the bottom of this claim. And as you said, they rebutted the claim that Starlink was used to manipulate the votes in the 2024 election. And they found no evidence of Starlink-related fraud. Starlink is not used to support election infrastructure. There was only one place in the United States where they could point to that Starlink technology was used to support election infrastructure. There was no evidence that it was being used to manipulate the votes. And even if there had been, use of Starlink, there are systems in place to ensure that, these kinds of discrepancies are caught, risk limiting audits, canvassing, and certification of the election results are all kind of safeguards to ensure that the election count is certified and there are no issues with that.
So there was one place, you said, in the United States where Starlink was used. Where was that, and what exactly, what was the role Starlink was doing in that
state? Yeah, so we asked experts, if Starlink technology was used anywhere to support election infrastructure, and they only knew of one place, Tulare County, California. And Trump won Tulare County with about 60% of the vote in the 2024 election. And that county also had about 28,000 in-person voters in the 2024 election.
So why
in that county?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh yeah. So in that county, Starlink was used to have the electronic poll books, which are digital voter registration records. They use that to connect the poll books to the county voter database, but vote tabulators in Tulare County, California, were not used. Connected to Starlink satellite internet.
So basically, you're saying they were not involved in the tabulation of counting the votes, although they were involved in the infrastructure in that county in California.
Correct. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So they were not officially involved. One might ask, why were they involved at all, since that is, Elon Musk's company? And he is clearly partisan and supportive of Trump.
I can't speak to why that county exactly used that, but Starlink was distributed in some places after the hurricanes that happened in September and October 2024 in North Carolina, for example. But in those areas, it was not used. That technology was not used for election infrastructure. It was used for other kind of internet connectivity. Yeah, it could be that that is, you know, one reason why Tulare County needed it for additional kind of internet infrastructure, but I can't really speak to that decision.
So Starlink did have the capability. It just was not authorized to become involved. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying that some states like North Carolina, for example, were given Starlink technology after the hurricanes. It was handed out to help, you know, those areas because they were impacted by the hurricanes and they, I guess, needed the extra infrastructure. But it, in those areas, like in North Carolina, like we reached out to, you know, local and state election officials in North Carolina, and they said that Starlink was not used for any election related purposes. And also, like, the ballot marking devices, the tabulators in North Carolina are never connected to the internet. So there wouldn't have been, you know, that issue in the first place.
Yes. So state officials said voter tabulation machines are not connected to the internet, period, during elections. And one said that was, quote unquote, according to your report, utter garbage. Was that supported by more than one state official?
I mean, yeah, we reached out to North Carolina officials, and then we, you know, that official told us that state law prohibits election equipment to be connected to the internet. And we checked the laws in the six other swing states, Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And they have similar, you know, election security protocols that ensure voting equipment is never connected to the internet during ballot tabulation.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you in your research, were you speaking with individuals from both parties, mm-hmm. Democrats and Republicans? Or were you cognizant of that, or how did that?
Yeah, definitely. PolitiFact tries to reach out to, you know, people across party lines, nonpartisan individuals and experts. You know, we spoke to nonpartisan election experts as well that, you know, we're not like election administrators, for example, but they're, you know, people who specialize in election security and they know, you know, the ins and outs of, you know, the systems and can speak to how they operate and what systems are in place to ensure that the election is secure. And they told us that, you know, it was secure and there are systems in place to ensure that if, you know, Starlink was tried, if someone tried to use Starlink to manipulate the vote, there are systems in place to catch that.
So their cybersecurity experts addressed the issue extensively. They investigated it. So officially Starlink was not supposed to be involved. And you're saying that they couldn't have really been involved because there's no, the votes are not in any way connected with the internet during an election. But
yes, correct.
What about, so cybersecurity measures, what cybersecurity measures were put in place?
I mean, what I can speak to what experts told me is that, you know, if there had been issues, you know, with, you know, someone trying to manipulate the vote, there are things like risk limiting audits and canvassing and certification of the election results that ensure that if there was, you know, some sort of manipulation, that they would catch it in the process. Like there are a lot of checks and balances on our voting system that, you know, ensure that if there are any sort of malfeasance, it's caught.
So
the federal cybersecurity infrastructure security agency reported right after the election that the agency had, quote, no evidence of malicious activity that had a material impact on the security or integrity of our election infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. So what about the Starlink's uploading votes? There were claims that Starlink was involved. Was Starlink involved whatsoever in uploading votes? Did it play a role in, you know, in that at all?
Yeah, that was the central, one of the central, you know, kind of claims we focused on. And we found no evidence that Starlink was used to upload votes because, as I said, it wasn't used really. And we only found one area where it was used to support election infrastructure. And in that case, it wasn't used with the vote tabulators at all. And so there's no evidence that it was used to upload votes because it wasn't really used at all to tabulate the votes.
Mm-hmm. So it was not used.
Yes.
So what about the, I guess we want to know whether Starlink, Elon Musk's company, had the capability to switch votes. How many experts did you speak with about Starlink's capability to do that, whether they were authorized to or not? Because clearly, if they were going to be up to something, underhanded or nefarious, it would not be above board. Did that company have the capability to do that?
No, I don't believe it would have the capability to do that because, as I said, Starlink isn't used to support election infrastructure in anywhere but one place that I mentioned in Tulare County, California. And in that place, it was just for the digital poll books. And so it wouldn't have been able to, manipulate the votes in that way or do anything like that.
I just want to make sure we get to all the claims because there are a number of claims on social media. Now, the social media posts have claimed that Musk, Trump, and Russian President Vladimir Putin conspired to rig the election in Trump's favor by using Starlink to systematically switch votes across swing states. Now, Trump won every single swing state, and skeptics point out that in one state where Trump won, candidates down ticket lost. And I think they point to Kerry Lake as an example. So they say, aha, why did Trump win and the other candidates lost? There must have been something inappropriate going on there. Your response to that, Sarah Swan?
Yeah, we saw that in posts, you know, that we fact checked. And, you know, I think sometimes there, you know, when one expert, kind of put it this way, Mike Rothschild is a journalist and conspiracy theory expert. And he put it this way, he said, you know, quote, conspiracy theories about lost elections being stolen are a natural way to cope with an unexpected outcome. And so with this kind of example in some areas or some voters choosing to vote for Trump for president, but then maybe Democrats for down ballot races, you know, that's what we call ticket splitting. And although there is a strong correlation between votes cast for president and votes cast for a senator, for example, it's not ironclad. You know, voters are free to choose candidates from different parties for different offices, and some fraction of voters do choose to do that. Ticket splitting, you know, has become less common in recent elections as political polarization has increased, but the practice hasn't disappeared entirely. You know, experts said that split ticket voting does not provide sufficient evidence that any malfeasance has occurred. You know, there were some, you know, examples of ticket splitting, like for Kerry Lake, like you mentioned, in Arizona. You know, controversy or lack thereof can affect a candidate's campaign. So for Kerry Lake, you know, she lost her gubernatorial race in 2022 because it was built heavily on claims that the elections were fraudulent, and including the 2020 presidential race that Biden won. And this year, in 2024, she lost to Democrat Ruben Gallego in a campaign year when Latino voters were pivotal with the electorate in Arizona. So, you know, that could be, you know, kind of one explanation for that race. But yeah, ticket splitting, while, you know, maybe not super common, still happens sometimes. And it's not evidence that there was anything, you know, wrong with the vote.
So A second social media user wrote, quote, the Russians have access to Starlink terminals and therefore the satellites. The Russians are known hackers. What were your, did you investigate that at all, Sarah Swan?
Yeah, we spoke with an expert, Jenya Coulter, who's a senior election analyst at the OSET Institute, which is a nonprofit group focused on accurate, secure, and transparent elections. And she told us regarding claims about Russian hackers swaying the election outcomes. She said she was, quote, less worried about Russian hackers affecting vote totals and significantly more concerned, end quote, with the deluge of incorrect election information that Russian-linked groups distributed online before the election and the bomb threats targeting election infrastructure that officials were said were of, quote, Russian origin. So I don't think, you know, the experts we talked to had major concerns of Russian interference or hacking. But, you know, there was concerns about, you know, before the election, you know, incorrect information, false information kind of circulating online about that.
Mm-hmm. So how deeply did you look into the possibility that some of the cybersecurity could have been compromised? Elon Musk had millions, billions of dollars that he showed, demonstrated he was willing to pass around. Does your report investigate the possibility of something like that occurring? Bribes or someone selling out?
Yeah, no, we spoke to election security experts for this report, and, you know, they did not, raise concerns or show evidence that there was, like, you know, a major kind of campaign attempt to manipulate the election like this. We did not find evidence that there this was, you know, the case in this report.
Mm-hmm. So, Sarah, what made you want to take, first give me a good summary of what you found and why?
Sure. Yeah. So shortly after the 2024 election, we saw these social media posts claiming that Elon Musk's Starlink technology manipulated votes to benefit Trump. And, these posts were saying that Starlink was used to upload votes in swing states. And they also, you know, pointed to some swing state voters choosing Trump for president and voting for Democrats in other down ballot races. But election security experts and state and local election officials rebutted these claims, saying that the 2024 presidential election was secure and there was no evidence of Starlink related fraud. Because, as I said, the Starlink technology was not used to support election infrastructure anywhere but one place that experts could find in California. And so ultimately, after our research and reporting on this claim, we rated it pants on fire, which is our worst rating on our Truth-O-Meter, because the statement was not accurate and it made a ridiculous claim.
Okay. Sarah Swan, a reporter for PolitiFact, an organization that fact-checked for Meta platforms like Facebook and Instagram. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on What's at Stake.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us now is investigative reporter Greg Pallas. He's known for his investigative reports on The Guardian, the BBC, and Democracy Now!, and bestsellers, including The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. Greg Pallas' new film about the latest attacks on the right to vote that bent this past election. It's called Vigilante Incorporated, America's New Vote Suppression Hitmen, narrated by Rosario Dawson and produced by Martin Sheen. Leonardo DiCaprio has released the film for free streaming at gregpallas.com. Good morning, Greg Pallas, and thank you so much for joining us this morning from L.A.
Good morning, Avery. Verna.
Yes.
You can tell. You can know it's 5:30 in the morning here.
That's
so.
Right. It's early out there, and I noticed you're not wearing your signature hat.
Right.
So, but we'll take you anyway.
Okay. Thank you. Right. Well, glad we could talk, and I'm glad that Sarah straightened out that getting rid of that conspiracy freak crap about Elon Musk fixing the election. It's white people who are very concerned about hacking, but that's not what happened in this election. This election was about vote suppression. So go right ahead, Vernon. So thank you, Sarah, for that good mm-hmm. report.
Mm-hmm. So you heard Sarah debunk those theories mm-hmm. that Elon Musk and his Starlink yeah. company interfered in the election and swung votes to Trump. And you say you pretty much agree with that.
I 100% agree with that. We've had this we've had a bunch of characters with no information whatsoever say, look, I wrote a piece. You should go to gregpalace.com. I'm not a big friend of Elon Musk. I wrote it up there. The number two article is Elon Musk, batteries not included, about how this grifter has literally made his half trillion dollar fortune from government subsidies. He's a vicious racist and anti-Semite. He is an illegal alien, by the way. He came into the country through a false claim on a visa. He should be in prison and then thrown and deported, but he did not rig this election. So Sarah is correct. I've checked it out too, and she's absolutely correct on this. What did happen is something, in fact, far, far uglier. And that's
you argue that if illegal voters had been allowed to vote, there are four states in which Trump would have lost.
That's correct.
And so, you have an article that's about to be released called Trump Lost Voter Suppression 1. Yes. Can you so basically the four of those states were all swing states too. That's ones that you focus on, Florida, Georgia, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
Well, before I was a journalist, before I was with the Guardian and BBC and Democracy Now, I was a forensic economist for the a detective basically for the U.S. Justice Department, several attorneys general. And I taught statistics. And the real issue here, that line, Trump lost, vote suppression won. That's from the president of the NAACP of Georgia, Gerald Griggs, one of the great trial attorneys in America. And I did do very, very exact calculations of these things. Here's the dirty little secret. In America, we don't let every American citizen vote. And we don't count all the ballots that come in. And this is not from me. I'm a statistician. I get my statistics from what's called almost all my statistics come from the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission. The federal government actually not only keeps track of the vote, but keeps track of the non-vote. And we have a whopping, there is no other major member of the OECD, which are the advanced nations, in which so many people are blocked from voting and so many ballots are not counted, and the color of those people blocked and the color of the ballots that are rejected, and the numbers are absolutely huge. So let me give you some numbers here.
Well, let me ask you first, Greg, can you measure how much suppression was actually applied in each state? Can you get specific like that?
Yes, I have very exacting calculations that I've used, and unlike others, and you know, PolitiFact is kind of I'm sorry, Sarah, but PolitiFact is kind of a sloppy organization, but it's I go with the official numbers. Okay, for example, we had in the last election, 4 million, according to the United States government, we had 4,776,706 registrants, just short of 5 million registered voters were purged from the voter rolls. Purge means that you lose your right to vote because you've been removed by a government official. Now, I'm not counting people who are removed because they're dead. I'm not counting people who moved away. I'm not counting people, by the way, you can't vote if you're certified nuts or if you're incarcerated in most states. So that's an exact number. But who gets purged from the voter rolls? overwhelmingly, it is voters of color. I did a report for the technical report for the ACLU and for the Black Voters Matter Fund. I went into federal court. We had in the 2020 election, we had 198,351 Georgians removed from the voter rolls. Let me repeat that, 198,000. Now, this, again, was a number calculated from government statistics for the ACLU. What we did was, and just so you know, it's overwhelmingly Black voters who were removed in Georgia. So, for example, now what they do is they say
before you go into that, Greg, we've got to take a quick break for our social justice calendar. You're listening to Greg Palace. Stay with us. We'll be back in a moment.
Peace. This is your social justice calendar for the week of Monday, January 6th, 2025. Happy New Year. To begin, on Friday, January 10th, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., there will be a discussion around improving cultural congruency across mental health care delivery network located on 800 Main Avenue Southwest. More info can be found on www.psychiatry.org. Also on January 10th at 5 p.m., there will be Mr. DC, Men of Culture Community and Networking Event at Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Library Auditorium. There will also be a race relations panel discussion at 5 p.m. with the mayor of Glenarden, Maryland. Tickets and more info can be found on eventbrite.com. The next day, DC for Palestine is holding a teach-in on the history and culture of the Palestinian people, their resistance against occupation, and how this relates to the issues facing DC. At the Deanwood Community Center Large Multipurpose Room on Saturday, January 11th from 2 to 3:30 p.m. More info can be found on Instagram at DC4Palestine. Finally, on January 12th from 4 to 6 p.m. at the Festival Center, 1640 Columbia Road Northwest, there will be a Kids Bake Off for Palestine. You can bake in the competition or simply be in community. Proceeds support the Gaza Soup Kitchen and displaced families in Cairo. More info can be found on FusedGlassCommunityStrategies.org. The WPFW Social Justice Calendar connects you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. Submissions are due by Thursday at 5 p.m. at least 1 week in advance of your event. The Social Justice Calendar is one more way WPFW builds a better world, one broadcast at a time.
And welcome back to What's at Stake. I'm Verna Avery Brown, and we are this morning investigating claims on the authenticity of the election in 2024. We heard from Sarah Swan with PolitiFact. And she concluded definitively that no, Elon Musk and his organization Starlink did not help to sway or manipulate votes to allow Donald Trump to win. Now we are hearing from investigative journalist Greg Palast, who has said that, 5 million voters were purged from the rolls and that most of them were voters of color, surprisingly. Greg, pick it up from where you left off before we took the break.
Well, yes. And it's important to understand that, this idea that, and I'm going to be very straight about it. There's kind of a racism in it when people talk about Elon Musk fixing the election, because it's white voters concerned about their vote. The real issue of this election, as I quoted Gerald Griggs, the president of the NAACP of Georgia, vote suppression won. And so once again, now here is how you well, let's use the word steal an election. You don't do it by playing games with computers. You no longer have direct. America is all paper ballots at this point. You may use a computer to print your ballot. So it's not about computers. Let's skip all that nutty stuff. It's about racism. It is about blocking voters from voting, voters of color. So for example, and not counting their ballots. So you had 4.77 million voters This is, again, federal government numbers, 4.77 million voters were removed from the voter rolls based on what I call the poison postcard trick. What they do is they send out, voters get challenged. They send out to target black voters and young people and a lot of Jewish voters with heavily Democratic demographics. They send out postcards to them. And if you don't return the postcard, you lose your vote. And this is, and then you are shunted. If you do show up to vote, you're shunted to something called a provisional ballot, what I call a placebo ballot, because you think you voted, but you haven't. Now, who gets these provisions? Now, just to give you the numbers.
What is that? Is that in every state?
Every single state under federal law.
So sends out these postcards.
Right. So, in, for example, the United States Elections Assistance Commission found that 42.3%, almost half of all the provisional ballots cast in America, are not counted, rejected, and not one of those, and that's a million votes, not one of those million voters, not a single one was charged with being an illegal voter or a fraudulent voter. They simply had their ballots canceled. This is never discussed. We talk about it in Britain. When I report in Britain, and who gets the provisional ballots? Wait, let me back up one thing. Who gets provisional ballots? According to the federal government itself, the chance you will be shunted to a provisional ballot, which will not be counted, is 300% higher if you're black, Latino, or Asian American than if you're white. So the chance is 300% bigger if you're a voter of color than if you're white to get to a provisional ballot. In addition, total rejections of ballots, and this is of all kinds. We reject provisional ballots and ballots which are mailed in. Black people in the majority vote early or mail in or use a drop box for their ballots. The vast majority of African Americans in America vote early or through absentee or drop box ballots. So the chance that their ballots will be disqualified, ready for this, Ave, Verna? The chance your ballot will be disqualified is 900% higher if you're black than if you're white. That's from the United States Civil Rights Commission. This is not from me, Greg Palast. This is
so how are they going to know if your ballot is black if you're mailing it in?
It's super. Well, first,
redlining.
Well, there's two ways. It says BLA next to your name if you're black in the southern states.
Oh, states do that. Okay.
Well, we by federal law, under the Civil Rights Act, the segregationists, the former segregationist states, were required by federal law to mark the race of the voter on the ballot. So I'm not guessing. Like, for example, a lot of people know me, this is Greg Palast speaking, as the reporter with BBC Television and Guardian that uncovered that 58,000 black men were removed from the voter rolls back in 2000, the Gore-Bush campaign. They were targeted as felons, people who couldn't vote in Florida because you had a felony conviction. In fact, not one, and I want to repeat this, of the 58,000 black men removed, not one was a felon. I have the names and addresses of every single one of those people, but I wasn't guessing about their race because it said BLA, black, next to their names, the Florida voter rolls. Same in Georgia. We know exactly. We can tell you exactly what your race is because it's marked on your registration, though you can also tell by precinct. So, for example, in the last presidential election, 2022 midterm election, I was working with the Washington Post on graphically putting down where challenges to voters were, where voters were being purged. And it was an exact match. Voters removed from the voter rolls were an exact 130,000 voters removed from the voter rolls. Almost all of them were in black precincts. We actually did with the Washington Post a mapping showing that those voters removed. And again, not one of them was tagged as an illegal voter. but they're removed from the state because a right-wing group backed by the right-wing Bradley Foundation, these uber right-wing billionaires, had challenged over 100,000 voters' right to vote, and almost all of them were Black residents of Milwaukee and students, by the way, students in Madison, Wisconsin.
In addition, all they have to do is basically challenge a particular vote.
Right.
Does the voter, him or herself, know they're being challenged? Do they have an opportunity to rebut or to appeal?
Yes. Well, it's a trick, because what they do is they send students, like my son checks his mail. Literally, he was checking his mail once a semester. They send letters to students, to Black people. They send a little postcard. It looks like junk mail. If you don't respond to that postcard, you lose your vote. I call it the poison postcard trick. So, and what you do is, if you see that postcard and you can respond to it, you might stand a chance of getting your vote back. And there's something even uglier that happened this past year, which you'll see in my film, Vigilantes, Inc. Again, that's, it's introduced by Martin Sheen, my producer, and Rosario Dawson narrates. So it's a great film. You can download it for free. Thank you, Leonardo DiCaprio, at gregpalace.com. And I want you to see it, because this is something new happened in this past election, which hadn't happened before, which is vigilante vote challenges. Now, what is that? That started, was last used in 1946 by the Ku Klux Klan, where an individual, not a government agent, but an individual can say that person shouldn't be allowed to vote because I think that they're an illegal voter. You don't even have to give the reasons. You just have to say, I think that that's an illegal voter. Now, this is, understand, the Ku Klux Klan used this in 1946 to knock off Black voters off the voter rolls across the South, especially in Georgia. Now, they brought it back this year. The group True the Vote, which is promoted by Donald Trump. Their film, 2000 Mules, was launched at Mar-a-Lago. Trump praises this group. It's a group of self-appointed vigilante vote fraud hunters. And in my film, you'll see that one single GOP official, one single Republican official, works for Marjorie Taylor Greene in Georgia. She personally challenged 32,000 voters in Cobb County, Georgia. They would lose their vote. We have Black soldiers. You'll meet a Black soldier in my film, Major Gamaliel Turner. And Gamaliel Turner was one of 4,000 Black soldiers. Most of them were Black soldiers who were challenged by a single Republican official in southern Georgia. They all lost their vote because of these challenges, except for Major Turner, who literally, when he says, "Where's my ballot?" They said, "Mr. Turner, you've been challenged. All you have to do is come into our office." This guy is assigned to a military base in California. They took Black voters, Black soldiers who were assigned to, from Syria to Germany to California. And those Black soldiers, because they were assigned to other military bases, lost their vote, 4,000 of them in Georgia, because of a Republican Party challenge. Altogether, the Republican Party challengers took away the votes of 300,000 people of color in Georgia. And that swung the state of Georgia.
So, Greg, let's make sure we get this straight. Mm-hmm. You are saying a person can show up at the polls ready to vote, and mm-hmm. Some person that's not a government official can just say, "Oh, I challenge that person's vote," and
that's
they will
right.
be denied a ballot.
That's
preposterous, and that is legal in how many states?
Well, it's spread to by our count at least 23 states so far. It was first taken for test drive by the Trump group True the Vote in Georgia in 2020, and working with the NAACP and Black Voters Matter, we were able to reverse that. However, the laws got changed again in places like Georgia, making it quite legal to mount these challenges. In fact, here's a number that should scare you. By August of election of this election past election year, you had 382,000 people challenged by vigilantes associated with the group True the Vote. Let me repeat that. Over a third of a million voters had their right to a ballot challenged. And understand how they do it. They get these lists from True the Vote. 40,000, and I want to repeat that, 40,000 people volunteered to be challengers for this organization, True the Vote. Now, again, and what they do is they give you email lists of voters to challenge, overwhelmingly voters of color. We called 800 of them. 800 of them we called. We spoke to them. And so they've challenged by the hundreds of thousands in just Georgia. But they nationwide, this swung four states.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about those states, Michigan, right. Wisconsin, Georgia, and Florida.
Yes.
You said it swung the vote in those states.
Yes. So what you have is in four states, Georgia, massive number of challenges, a massive purge. And when I say that they illegally and wrongly removed 198,000 voters, I'm not guessing. I worked with the experts from Amazon and Microsoft. And working with the ACLU, Black Voters Matter, and Rainbow Push, by the way, we actually went through every single name of every person purged by the state of Georgia, name by name, address by address, with the massive databases that Amazon has. And we are able to determine, by the way, and with the post office, that we are able to identify every single voter that was wrongly removed. It was over 200,000 in Georgia.
200,000.
And that swung the state. And here's the thing. We're not guessing that these are Black voters. We know that they are. In fact, it included Martin Luther King's 92-year-old cousin was one of the Black voters denied their vote. I was there when she was – I was literally there when she was thrown out of the polling station and her granddaughter was in tears that – this is Martin Luther King's cousin. Been living in the same place in Georgia, in same house in Georgia, in 50 years.
Mm. So and now Trump won Georgia in 2024 by 50.7 compared to Harris's 48.5%.
Yes.
So that's like a 10.2% spread.
So we had a two. We're talking about a 1% spread. So what's happened is about the steel factor in Georgia in these four states was something north of 2.3%. Now, that may not sound like much, but that swung four states. It's very important to understand the numbers here. And in fact, if you now the total number of votes, which we can calculate pretty accurately, is 7,119,454 voters were denied the right to vote or had their ballots disqualified. So it's about 2.3. That's about 2.3%. But that means that Trump would have lost the popular vote by about 5 million, if not for these resurgent Jim Crow tactics. We had, according to the Brennan Center for Justice, 38 laws were passed between the 2020 and the 2024 election, which made it harder for voters of color to mail in their ballots and vote absentee. In fact, the Republican Attorney General of Texas, Ken Paxton, said if he did not stop the mailing out of 2.4 million ballots to the Black voters of Houston, and Houston, by the way, has the largest Black population in America of any city. If they didn't stop the mail-in balloting in Houston, Texas, according to the Republican Attorney General, Trump would have lost Texas. So this is how Jim Crow works today. It's sophisticated. It's done as a pretense that this is to protect from vote fraud. But we don't have vote fraud in America. We don't have people voting twice. We don't have dead people voting because no one wants to go to prison for 5 years to vote for the school board or even cast one vote for president. So this is the issue, is Jim Crow and the U.S. press. And by the way, PolitiFact has been terrible on this. They don't look at this stuff at all. Very lazy organization. We have a real serious problem of accelerating Jim Crow restrictions in voting in America. This is the problem.
Okay. So can you say definitively, Greg Palast, that had it not, so have you broken down each one of these states? Because in Georgia, there were 16 electoral college votes up for grabs. And is it your conclusion that because of voter suppression, the vote was swung to Trump, giving him the win? Now, if had not been for the voter suppression, is your belief that Trump, that Harris would have won Georgia?
100%. I spent, just so you know, my organization has spent, first of all, 10 years for Democracy Now!, Al Jazeera, BBC, Rolling Stone, and The Guardian, spent 10 years covering Georgia in specific. And again, working with the ACLU, Rainbow Push and NAACP, and the experts, where we go through these purge lists, and we see who's being denied. So you take Georgia, for example, there's a young man, Adrian Consonary. He mailed in his ballot, but he was denied. They denied his vote because they said his signature didn't match. This is one of the tricks that they use. We have something. Let me see if I can find this number for you quickly.
There's no way to appeal these challenges unless you see that postcard.
Right. In this case, a major attorney simply called this black military career officer, called Georgia and said, where's my absentee ballot? And they said, well, Mr. Turner, you've been challenged. If he didn't know that, he wouldn't have even known he was challenged. And even worse, if he mailed in his ballot, and again, the majority of African Americans vote by mail, drop box, or early. If he did get his ballot, mailed it in, it wouldn't have been counted. Again, it would not have been counted. And so this is the problem. And he would not have known it until way after the election. And you know, we just found out. He didn't know that his 2022 ballot was disqualified because they said his mail-in ballot came in late. And I have photographs of him actually filling out his ballot more than a week before the election, and supposedly didn't arrive on time. But this is what happens. And it is racial, because if you're black, Hispanic, or Asian American, the chance that you'll be shunted to one of these uncountable provisional ballots is 300% higher than if you're white. The rejection rate among black people is 900% higher than if you're white. So if you mail in your ballot, they'll find, oh, there's something wrong with your signature, like they did to Adrian Consonary, again, a black man who lost his vote. So we come down, the numbers are pretty clear. Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin would have gone for Harris. That would have given her 286 electoral votes, which would have given her the election, were it not for these new Jim Crow tactics.
Okay, so what can be done about this? It sounds like the midterm elections coming up to regain control of the House and the Senate is one strategy, so that some of these laws, I don't know, can be federal laws can be put in place to override some of these state laws.
Well, I think it's going to go the opposite way. That is, the federal, I think that with Trump in, we're going to see even more restrictions on voting. People think he's going to, when he says that we won't need to vote again, people think he's going to like declare martial law or do something dramatic like that to stop an election. No, that's not how they do it. They do it by removing literally millions of voters from the voter rolls. They do it by not counting ballots, disqualifying ballots. And as it gets worse, so again, the big fear I have working with NAACP, I was just talking with Reverend Jesse Jackson, and you know, he's saying this is, we have to have a new resurgent voting rights movement.
Okay. So we're running out of time, Greg Pallas, to discuss this. I'm gonna give Sarah a quick, we don't have time for that actually. I'm so sorry. But we'll have Sarah back to address some of the concerns about the Poynter Institute, some of the charges that were made. We were speaking with investigative journalist Greg Pallas, known for complex undercover investigations spanning five continents, from the Arctic to the Amazon, from the Congo to California, using skills he learned over two decades as an investigator of corporate fraud on behalf of the U.S. Department of Justice, 20 attorneys general, and government from England to Brazil. Greg, thank you for joining us this morning on What's at Stake. Sarah Swan, thank you as well for being our guest this morning on What's at Stake. And thank you to our engineer extraordinaire, Mike Masella. Up next, Wake Up and Stay Woke with Dr. E. Faye Williams. I'm Verna Avery Brown, joining you for What's at Stake. And as the late Nelson Mandela always said, it always seems impossible until it's done. Be well.
What do Angela Davis, Mehdi Hasan, Ibrahim X. Kendi, V, formerly Eve Ensler, Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Sonia Sanchez, Amy Goodman, Medea Benjamin, Mosab Abu Toha, Congresswoman Cori Bush, Noura Erekat, Congressman Jamal Bowman, Farafina Khan, Linda Sarsour, Isra Shakir, Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, Sweet Honey in the Rock, and WPFW have in common? Well, Busboys and Poets 2025 Peace Ball, Voices of Justice and Liberation, an event featuring live music, speeches, performances, food, and drink. Details, including a complete list of speakers and performers, as well as how you can both support WPFW and join the fun on Saturday, January 18th, 8 p.m. at Arena Stage's Mead Center for American Theater, can be found at WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Code Pink Women for Peace is coming to you live from Washington, D.C. and New York City, Thursday at 11 a.m. Code Pink Radio is an energizing new program focused on ending wars and militarism and building a peace economy. Listen weekly to robust conversation and inspiration from grassroots peacemakers from places like Korea, Yemen, Venezuela, Palestine, and Iran, as well as peacemakers in our nation's capital who are confronting war hawks in the White House and in Congress and modeling the actions we want our government to take. Again, that's Code Pink Radio, Thursdays at 11 a.m. on Washington, D.C.'s WPFW and New York City's WBAI, an engaging hour of cutting-edge conversation not to be missed.
We are women of the world. We're from the east, south, north, and west.
We're back! WPFW is excited to announce the return of the Social Justice Calendar, your go-to weekly update on the latest events, actions, and initiatives promoting equity, justice, and change across our community. The calendar's mission is to connect you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Each week, we'll spotlight rallies, workshops,
forums, and community actions happening across the region. If you have an event to share, submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of said event in a format that is no longer than a sentence or two on Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, at least 2 weeks in advance of your event date. Space is limited, so submissions are considered in the order that they are received. The Social Justice Calendar is yet another way that W